It was a little march by John Barrows to start off our Friday morning. Happy Friday to you. I'm Cordelia Brown. This is KPR. And that was the New York Woodwind Quintet. Next on Kansas Public Radio, we have a recording of the KU Symphony Orchestra. And we'll be talking with their current director in just a little bit about KU Symphony's upcoming concert and about their year. Support for classical music this morning on KPR comes from Peasley Tech in Lawrence, Kansas. The Peasley Promise offers debt-free career training for local high school students and low-income Douglas County residents. Details and donation information at peasleytech.org/peasleypromise. And from KJHK, hosting their fall membership drive now through Sunday. Information on how to support KJHK is available at kjhk.org. And now here's the KU Symphony from Vespers 2007, a KPR recording now on KPR. A KPR recording of The Waltz of the Flowers from The Nutcracker by Tchaikovsky. We recorded that at KU Vespers in 2007, and David Neely was the conductor then, and the conductor now is Creston Heron, and he's here with us in the studio. Good morning, Creston.
Good morning, Cordelia. Thank you very much for the invitation to speak about upcoming performances.
Yes. Will it be the first concert of the year?
Yes. Season opener will be next Wednesday, September 24th, 7:30 p.m. at the Lead Center of Kansas on the University of Kansas campus. Very excited for this.
What's on the program?
So this program is titled Visions and Temptations, and we're excited to feature not only some Kansas premieres, but also some wonderful treasures of the symphonic repertoire. We start out with the wild, fiery, exotic Danse Bacchanale by Camille Saint-Saëns, and from his opera, Samson and Delilah, which this is one of those pieces that just sweeps up the audience and the listener into the drama. And Saint-Saëns does a wonderful job of allowing the orchestra to truly unleash its full energy, and it's just such a thrill to perform. And I call it an ear tickler for the audience member. And then we have a Kansas premiere with Michael Gilbertson's percussion concerto, and we actually get to feature one of our own, our percussion professor of percussion, Dr. Garrett Arney, as well as his partner in their professional duo called Arcs Duo. And this is a very unique concerto, unlike most concertos, which will feature and spotlight the virtuosity of a soloist. This is more collaborative. And the premise of this concerto is to truly expand the color palette of the percussion instrument, and really, in a collaborative effort, create this sort of an atmosphere of this color that for the listener is just such a truly remarkable experience. So we're very excited that the audience will get to experience this next Wednesday. And then finally, we get to share one of the most iconic pieces in the symphonic repertoire, Pictures at an Exhibition by Mussorgsky, arranged by Ravel, which, by the way, just became available for purchase this year, so that was exciting. And for the listener, this is their opportunity to explore an art gallery in sound, except we have each of the movements are inspired by pieces of artwork. But this time we have a little twist. And because many of the pieces of the original artist, Victor Hartmann, have been lost, we partnered with the visual arts department, and we are excited to feature an incredible young female artist, Kyra Fox, And she's reimagining all of the pieces. And so the audience will be able to not only before the concert and during intermission be able to see these new works reimagined, but very special after the performance of the piece. These pieces of work will be available for purchase for anyone that would like to take one home with them. So it's going to be a very unique experience for our audience member. We're very excited to share this with the community.
What a good idea. You know, you should copyright that and make it available to other orchestras.
Oh. I'm very excited to see them myself. I haven't seen them.
Oh, you haven't.
I'll find out this
weekend.
Oh, I
can just, because some of them, you know, like the Hut on Foul Legs.
Yes.
You know, that's such a crazy thing to even imagine. So Kaya Fox. Okay.
Yes. And she'll be at the performance as well, and everyone will get to meet her. But it's one thing to be able to take these classic or iconic masterpieces and kind of honor the past, but to be able to look through the lens of the future or the present and see them in a different, unique way is also very enjoyable and I think very fresh for this time and for our audience members. So we're very excited to share that experience with everyone.
Now, the concert will be at the Lead Center.
Yes.
Have you practiced there yet?
We have our first dress rehearsal. Well, actually, we did. We just had a performance, our collage, which was a huge success. I mean, standing room only. And, of course, it not only featured every area in the School of Music, we had our almost 400 marching band create sound that I've never heard before. It's such a exhilarating way to open up the year. So yes, we were able to perform there, and we're excited.
I'm just imagining pictures done in the Lead Center. Oh my, it's gonna blow the roof off. It's gonna be great.
Oh yes, and many of our own members have not performed this piece before, so it's certainly one that we want to continue sharing with the next generation.
What did you play at Collage?
So we performed the Danse Bacchanal.
Oh, nice.
Which was a huge hit for the audience, as I suspected, because you have, as I said, the Camille Saint-Saëns. He's wonderful at bringing out the and tapping into the expansive tapestry of the colors in the orchestra. And it just allows the orchestra to unleash this powerful ending where you can hear the debauchery of what's happening in what's the most famous scene in the entire opera from Samson and Delilah. So it's one that once you hear the piece, it leaves the audience member just singing the tune. It's like an earworm of a tune that they can't stop or get out of their head.
Tell us what's coming up. You know, what's the year like for the KU Symphony Orchestra?
Absolutely. This is such an incredible time for the KU orchestral program. We're excited that we are experiencing robust growth, not only in the School of Music, but certainly for the orchestral program. We now have three performing groups led by our flagship orchestra, the KU Symphony Orchestra, which we're performing incredible pieces all throughout. You can see our season on the website. You can just Google KU Symphony Orchestra and go to our website to see our wonderful season that we have programmed. We also have our Prairie Fire, KU Prairie Fire Chamber Orchestra, which is our premier string ensemble, which we have that features world premieres every year. And last year we were excited to have our first European tour. We completed our first European tour performing in Italy, multiple cities, a very successful tour. And they also have their inaugural album that will be released titled Prairie Fire, which will feature all new music next spring. This coming spring on the Clavier label. And so that's exciting. And then we also have our KU Philharmonic Orchestra, which is our campus orchestra, and also it's open to community members. So we have, which is now over an 80-piece full symphony orchestra. So, and they have performances at the Kansas Ballroom, and they'll be joining the KU Symphony Orchestra in February for our Serenades and Aria concert, where we'll be playing piece selections from Carmen, as well as Florence Price and Edward Elgar's fabulous serenade for strings. So it's, we have some wonderful programs planned for each of our orchestras this year.
Sounds very exciting, Creston.
Yes, it's some wonderful times, and for me, it's exciting because I'm back home. I'm a native Kansan, born and raised Kansas City, Kansas, grew up in KCK public schools and graduated from Sumner and Academy, and then KU for my undergrad. And to be back home, to be able to continue the legacy and tradition of this program has been a true honor. And it's a personal goal for me to see how much it impacted my life when I was there, and to see that and it, be able to inspire the next generation has been truly a remarkable experience for me.
And you also have an in on seeing who's a good player in the high school level, because tell us what your wife does.
Yeah, absolutely. My better half, Dawn Heron, she is the director of orchestras at Free State High School here in Lawrence, Kansas, and I can't say enough about her. She is one of my true inspirations. And even how I met her is through an interview trying to be her assistant, which she didn't give me the job. She ended up marrying me, so she still was my boss. I just didn't get paid for it. But it she is doing remarkable work there at Lawrence Free State, and we are thrilled at the KU campus to be able to go in and support and see that next generation hopefully come to our campus.
Great. Okay, so the concert is Wednesday evening, September 24th.
Yes, 7:30. Tickets are available on the website at lead.ku.edu. And also at the box office, you can just come day of up to the concert. But we'd love to see you there. It's going to be a very engaging, unique experience for everyone.
Sounds like a great program.
Absolutely. It's one for the ages.
We've been talking with Creston Heron, who's in his third year now as the orchestra director at KU. So thank you for coming over across campus and telling us about the concert. It sounds great.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
Next on KPR, let's hear music from Max Rager. And coming up later, we have a little bit more KU music, the Simon Carrington and his choir, and also Mozart's 40th Symphony. Thank you for listening to KPR. That's music by Max Rager, the clarinet quintet, with the Philharmonia Quartet Berlin plus Wenzel Fuchs, the clarinetist. Good morning, this is KPR, Kansas Public Radio, where support for the music comes from the Midwest Trust Center, presenting new dance partners with KC Ballet, Owen Cox Dance Group, Storling Dance Theater, and Regina Klenyoski Dance Company, September 19th and 20th. More at jccc.edu/mtc. And from Te Deum Choir, presenting Rachmaninoff's All Night Vigil in English translation, honoring the work's spiritual and musical legacy, September 27th and 28th, tickets and venues at te-deum.org. This is KPR. That's Antonio Vivaldi bringing us a breath of autumn this morning on KPR.
President Trump's immigration crackdown from NPR News.
Look forward to that story and many more starting at 3 for All Things Considered on KPR. Meanwhile, we'll bring you all the best classical music. I'm Cordelia Brown, your classical friend, and we'll have Sing Me to Heaven right after the news. Then we'll chat with the choral director at K-State about a new ensemble called ReSound. We're live, we're local, we're KPR from KU, KANU, and KANU HD1 Lawrence, KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia, KANV, KANV HD1 Olsburg Junction City, and KANQ Chanute. Support for news next on KPR comes from Blue Collar Press, located in Lawrence, Kansas. Blue Collar Press helps businesses and creatives build their brands through merchandising, from design to production to fulfillment. More information at bluecollarpress.com. It's 10:01. Good morning. It's KPR. Support for NPR comes from Lilly Endowment, a private foundation supporting NPR's coverage of religion and spirituality. This is KPR. Daniel Gothrop's Sing Me to Heaven. That was actually Simon Carrington's choir from a Vespers recording that KPR made in 1997. But enough about KU. Let's talk about K-State. I want to welcome Joshua Oppenheim to KPR, and he came over to talk. Well, first of all, he's the director of choir activities at K-State.
That's correct, yeah.
And I want to hear about what's going on with the K-State choirs. But, Josh, the reason I asked you here today is because I'm so curious about ReSound. It's now in print, it's R-E colon sound.
Correct, yes.
And this is not just one new group, but as your wife said on Instagram, yeah, it's the fulfillment of a 30-year dream. So tell us about ReSound.
Yeah, so you can pronounce it however you want. You can say ReSound or ReSound. It's sort of a, you know, to each their own kind of thing. And my wife, of course, is my biggest fan, so and I hers. But, yeah, it's actually a sort of a lifelong dream of mine that I had in my very first experiences singing and in choral music when I first heard professional ensembles like Chanticleer and the Robert Shaw Chorale. And when I went and did my doctoral degree, my dissertation project was on the history and development of professional and community choirs in the United States. And so it was always something that I thought perhaps was on the horizon for me, either a mirage or an oasis or something. But and then I spent, you know, most of my time in academia and still am, but a lot of encouragement from my colleagues around the country and alumni that have gone on to graduate and do wonderful things in music really kept sort of kept nudging me toward pushing go on this concept. And so in February, that was kind of when we first decided, yeah, let's do it. Now's the time. And so I turned a big number this year on my birthday. I turned 29 again for the 13th year. So I thought now's the time. But yeah, and it's actually a collection of different ensembles. So it's not just one ensemble, but it's a variety of different ensembles intended to serve a variety of purposes.
Tell us about each one and what they do.
So they'll all sort of launch at different points. The very first one is called ReSound, and that's the professional chamber choir. And this group has their debut performance on October 3rd and October 4th here in Kansas City, so in 2 weeks. And that group is made up of some of the best musicians around the country. We have Grammy winners and professional singers and professionals that sing as sort of hobbyists, as their not their vocation, but their vacation. But they're coming in from all over the country. We'll meet up for the first time on Thursday before the concert. So we'll have about 3 hours of rehearsal, and then we'll do the concert on Friday. And that group is designed to sort of push the envelope on what a traditional concert feels like and what a traditional concert can be for the audience. And so all of those performances, including this first one, which we're calling Opus 1, is designed around a narrative. And I don't want to give away too much, but the narrative for this first concert is that the concert actually takes place in the future. And so there's a storyline that begins even before the concert begins that the audience is part of. And it's fully immersive in that each audience member gets a curated box of elements that are intended to be used at certain points throughout the pieces that will sort of help accentuate the music, accentuate the experience. So those elements include things for not only just hearing, but sight and touch and smell and taste. And then the narrative is like I said, it's a through line from beginning to end. And so they're sort of taken on this journey. And the reason for that is because I really felt that as much as I love choral music, I feel like there's a whole large side of the population that never really experiences the way that musicians do. And I felt like there's a way to reach them. And I thought the best way to do that would be through story and through narrative. So even if somebody has never been to a choral concert before, they can come to this and feel like they understand what's happening. So the music itself is something that would be appreciated by, you know, people that love top-tier performances, but the wrapper that it comes in is supposed to be and designed to be accessible for all. And so that's kind of what the design is for this particular debut concert on October 3rd and 4th.
And two different venues, right?
Yeah, actually two different venues. And that was another thing that we wanted to try to do differently is instead of performing at traditional venues, which oftentimes are beautiful churches and things like that that have wonderful acoustics, we tried to find venues that were different and would maybe allow us to do some things beyond just traditional stand up and sing. And we're not one of those choirs that sort of walks on and sings and then walks off. And so the first venue is at the Grand Hall in the Power and Light District. It's a beautiful sort of two-story marble kind of a square box that has a second level and a second tier. And it's often used for weddings and those kind of ceremonies. But it has a beautiful, of course, acoustic because of the marble and hard surfaces. So that's the Friday night venue. And then Saturday, of course, being wedding season, was hard to find non-traditional venues on Saturday. So we're very fortunate to be at a church on Saturday, a beautiful church, Grace and Holy Trinity Cathedral, which hosts a number of wonderful music concerts there. So we're very fortunate to have both of those spaces in October.
So what kind of portions of the world did you decide were missing choral music?
I think, so in two ways I sort of categorize it. There's sort of what I call the performer side and then the patron side. And by patron, I just mean people that would come, just come to see it. So for the performer side, I felt like there was a lot of people that were missing from that tent, that could be in that tent. And so along with the professional chamber choir, we have a number of ensembles that are really dedicated to the community. So we have a youth choir that's designed for underserved youth, lower socioeconomic students that maybe can't get to a weekly rehearsal in a choir. And so this group, when this launches, will include transportation and all of those necessary components to allow students to experience what has been life-changing for all of us in music. We also will be launching a choir for the unhoused and or socially isolated, because again, seeing what the power of music can do with the community of the singers in every ensemble is just truly magical and always been inspiring for me, after all these decades doing it. We'll be launching a choir for the justice impacted or incarcerated individuals, again, to give them an experience that is gives them something to hope for and something to see beyond the places that they're in. And we also have plans to do a politician's choir, which I think will be interesting, and we'll see how it develops. But the idea is to bring together both sides, all sides, to do something that's not arguing or, you know, posting on social media, but to do something together and sort of a low pressure environment. But I think for me, music and singing together is really just about amplifying empathy, because as musicians, we're always listening, right? That's sort of the whole undercurrent, is just listening to each other. And so just by the mere act of, you know, both sides of the political aisle being able to do something combined by listening to each other, I think changes people. So I'm really excited to see how that one also develops.
I was really struck by the artwork for Opus 1.
Yeah.
It's like a mixture of science fiction, and it seemed futuristic.
Yeah, absolutely. It is futuristic, and it's also, again, the concert takes place about, I mean, it takes place October 3rd and 4th, but it takes place theoretically about 10, 15 years in the future. And so that's the narrative about the concert. I'll try not to give away too much more. But so when the audience enters, they are entering the year 2040-ish. And they're seeing what the future would be like or could be like. And then the music, the program, is sort of designed to help them think about music and think about the arts in a way that would help them realize the value of music and the arts. So there's a lot of layers to it. It's both just a, you know, amazingly sung program by professional singers, but also has a really interesting story, a concept that I think everybody could understand. It's extremely timely, I can say that. And also the idea that we're trying to promote, again, just in general, trying to promote what the arts are and what they can do for a society.
This sounds great. What's a good website to find out more about Resound Ensembles?
Thank you. The website is Resound Ensemble. So no colon, just Resound and then Ensembles. So just two words, and then .org is the website. And they can find out everything there, and they can buy tickets. And speaking of tickets, we have we would just love for everybody to see this concert. Because it's our debut, it's been difficult to get the word out. And so we know that once we perform, the word will get out. But we just want to make sure everybody gets a chance to see it. So we're doing a promo code for tickets for listeners. So if you type in KPR, you can get 40% off tickets. So all of your listeners, we would love to see you there and say hi after the concert and all that stuff.
So just type in KPR.
KPR, and it'll take 40% off as many tickets as you want.
Great.
Yeah.
Now, before I let you go, can you just give us a little bit about what's going on with the K-State Choirs? Do you have a concert coming up?
Yeah, we do have a concert actually coming up. And that one is November 5th. And we're doing a mini major work. It's been a while since we've done a mini major work. But one of my new best friends, Jake Runnestad, who's a really wonderful new composer. New? Maybe not new. He's just wonderful. But so we're doing a piece of his called The Lighthouse Keeper, which is a five-movement work for SATB choir and piano and string quartet. So we're really excited about doing that. And we, of course, have guest high schools. So Manhattan High School, the local high school chamber choir, will be joining us. So we always try to do side-by-side concerts there. So, yeah, that's what's coming up at K-State.
November 5th.
That's November 5th, yeah.
Okay, great.
Yep.
Well, thanks for coming up to tell us about Resound Ensembles.
I'm so appreciative of the opportunity. Thank you.
Yeah, sounds great, especially that the professional singers all coming from, like, all over the country. And the thing that makes you a professional singer is just the ability to, you know, you don't need a lot of rehearsal.
Right,
because, you know, you can read the music and you've been taught how to blend in and everything.
Yeah.
But, oh, that's going to be beautiful.
I'm so excited. And we had a Zoom about 2.5 weeks ago, because everybody in the group, not everybody knows everybody, but everybody knows me. So I'm sort of like the conduit But it's people from all of my different worlds come, you know, colliding together. So these are individuals that I met 30 years ago and people that were, you know, some alumni that are off doing great things in performance now to just colleagues that I've met over the last 30 years. And so, like I said, they're coming from Boston and Florida and the Carolinas and Chicago and everywhere. And it's really kind of been fun to watch the connection start to happen. And we're doing something different, too, in that we're not putting up at hotels or homestays, but we're renting a large compound, a B&B, an Airbnb. So all 25 of us will be staying at a huge Airbnb. And that's sort of, again, part of my design to really develop community with the ensemble. And with only about 12 hours before the first performance, I thought that we needed to at least, you know, be as close together as we could for that brief rehearsal, but also, you know, have meals together and play some games together and just get to know each other. And hopefully that will translate to the audience in the music as well.
Well, I think the chance to go into the future to 2040-ish sounds very exciting, and it's a great idea for a concert.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
So that's Resound Ensembles, October
3rd and 4th, Friday
in Kansas
Saturday.
City. Sounds fantastic. Yeah. Thank you for coming.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been a delight.
Josh Oppenheim, director of the choirs at K-State and also the one who thought up the Resound Ensemble. So thanks for getting everyone together.
Of course. Thank you so much.
All right. Next on Kansas Public Radio, let's go back a few centuries. Johann Ernst Altenburg, a concerto for seven trumpets and timpani on KPR, Kansas Public Radio. Members of the Philip Jones Brass Ensemble on Kansas Public Radio to bring us Altenburg's Concerto for Seven Trumpets and Timpani here on KPR at about 10:29, almost 70 degrees in Lawrence now. Next, a real classic, Mozart's 40th Symphony, before we hear a little bit of West Side Story. This month's KPR Community Spotlight is on Prairie Paws Animal Shelter. Serving Ottawa, Manhattan, and Emporia, Prairie Paws connects pets with new homes through adoption services, helping to ensure that every animal gets a second chance. More at prairiepaws.org. And support for classical music on Kansas Public Radio comes from the Kansas City Chamber Orchestra presenting Autumn Romance for Strings. Autumn Romance for Strings, Friday, September 26, 7:30 p.m. at Grace and Holy Trinity Cathedral in Kansas City, Missouri. Tickets and details at kcchamberorchestra.org. It's KPR. One of Mozart's greatest pieces, the Symphony No. 40 in G minor. And listen for the Arabesque No. 1 for flute and oboe, coming up in just a few minutes after the news here on KPR, Kansas Public Radio from the University of Kansas. And the group playing that was the Northern Sinfonia of England.
This week on KPR Presents, Itzel, join me for KPR Presents, 1 o'clock Sunday afternoon on KPR 2, 6 o'clock Sunday evening on KPR 1.
Thank you, Kay. Support for classical music on Kansas Public Radio comes from the University of Kansas, creating options, outcomes, and opportunities for Kansas and the world. Information about KU programs and research is at ku.edu. We'll also have pictures at an exhibition coming up at about 11:26 this morning. That's on the program for the September 24th, 7:30 p.m. concert. The KU Symphony Orchestra will be playing that in the Ravel Orchestration in the Lead Center. You don't want to miss that. We're on KANU and KANU HD1 Lawrence, KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia, KANV, KANV HD1 Olsburg Junction City, and KANQ Chanute. You can also listen through our app or on the web at kansaspublicradio.org.
46,200. The S&P has gained 13 points at 66.45, and the NASDAQ is up now 87 points. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from Fisher Investments. Fisher is committed to helping clients stay on track to reach their financial goals and enjoy a comfortable retirement. FisherInvestments.com. Investing in securities involves the risk of loss. This is KPR. From their album, that was Alex Klein, oboe, Rita Costanzi, harp. They both come to the Sunflower Music Festival in Topeka in the summers. Their recording of the Claude Debussy Arabesque No. 1 in E on KPR. And next, a forbidden piece. You know how the forbidden is always a little bit more tempting. Well, it's a piece by Maurice Ravel that in a different radio situation, I was told by the music director to, never play it. Never play the Ravel Tzigan. But it's coming up next. As well as the Parade of the Little Tin Soldiers, before we hear Pictures at an Exhibition. It's a great Friday morning for music, right here on KPR. The support for it comes from KTWU, Channel 11, local public television, where arts, entertainment, educational, and informational programming is offered daily. Details on the web at ktwu.org. KTWU, Channel 11, local public television. And the Lawrence Farmers Market, every Saturday morning from 7:30 to 11:30 at 824 New Hampshire in downtown Lawrence, April through November, rain or shine. More information available at lawrencefarmersmarket.org. This is KPR. A great concert showpiece for the violin that was Leila Josefowitz playing with Sir Neville Mariner's Academy of St. Martin in the Fields for a concert rhapsody, Tzigan, by Maurice Ravel, here on KPR. And the Ravel orchestration of Pictures at an Exhibition is coming up on KPR, but first, here's a little something by Leon Jessel on KPR. It's called The Parade of the Little Tin Soldiers. The Dallas Wind Symphony, Frederick Fennell, for Leon Jessel's Parade of the Little Tin Soldiers. Next on KPR, Amazing Music by Modest Mussorgsky, as arranged by Ravel. And it's a Hungarian afternoon with a Franz Liszt piano fantasia and a cello rhapsody by David Popper. Then Hearts Will Soar with Benjamin Godard's Concerto Romantique. Classical music with Jeff from noon to 3 on KPR. I'm Cordelia Brown with you until then. Support for the classical music today on KPR comes from the Lead Center, welcoming the Rom Trio, a two trumpet and piano family ensemble, Sunday, September 28th, 2 p.m. in the Pavilion. Tickets available at lead.ku.edu. Sir Charles McCarris and the Royal Liverpool Philharmonic will take us now through the various pictures of Victor Hartmann's exhibit and the promenade theme that you'll hear right at the beginning. Now that's us. That's us walking between paintings. Amazing Music by Modest Mussorgsky, Pictures at an Exhibition in the Ravel Orchestration. That was Sir Charles McCarris and the Royal Liverpool Philharmonic for recording made about 33 years ago on KPR, Kansas Public Radio. And you can hear that done live Wednesday, September 24th, when the University of Kansas Symphony Orchestra, plays that. For more information, lead.ku.edu. The first prelude from Opus 1 by Tellen Smith, and he was the pianist as well. And this is KPR, Kansas Public Radio from KU, KANU, and KANU, HD1 Lawrence, KANH, KANH, HD1 Emporia, KANV, KANV, HD1 Olsburg, Junction City, and KANQ Chanute. Jeff Watson has more classical music coming up in just a few minutes. Let's take a peek at his playlist. Looks like he'll have Joyful Day coming up right after the 12 o'clock news and Stardate. David Popper, Hungarian Rhapsody, a Concerto Romantique. And listen right after 1 o'clock, or else you'll miss Down a Country Lane, the music of Aaron Copland. Also, the Brahms First Cello Sonata is coming up at about 1:17, and there's a little bit more music of Frank Bridge this afternoon as well after that. I'm Cordelia Brown. Have a great weekend. Meet you back here at 9 o'clock Monday morning right here on KPR.
Live from